Chapter 39. The Scarecrow let out an ear-splitting, trilling chirp, like a summer locust on steroids, and it bounded to one side in an effort to keep the mounded ice of the fountain between us. I'd already seen how fast a fetch could move, and didn't bother with a snapshot. Instead, I let it distance itself from Molly and Charity until it reached cover behind the fountain's ice and stopped moving. Then I blew two-thirds of that dome away in a single blast of light, thunder, and fire. The golden summer flame hammered straight through the ice and into the Scarecrow. The old fetch was taken off guard, and the lance of fire incinerated what would have been a hip and thigh on a human being. It bellowed a metallic roar of pain and anger, bounced off one of the white marble statues of the three sisters, and was forced to seize hold of one of the statue's ankles to keep from bouncing over the edge of the parapet. But the Scarecrow wasn't the only fairy who cried out. Without warning, a hurricane of sound slammed into me, painfully intense. Once more, Arctis Tor shuddered, the black ice trembling and heaving while deep, almost subsonic groans echoed through the fortress. The other fetches' screams arose from below, a frenzied chorus of berserk rage. The heaving ground and the sonic sledgehammer tossed me into a bank of ice-sculpted rose vines with thorns three times as long as their flowers. The ice was not brittle, and it didn't break as my weight hit it. I felt a sharp pain from my ankle, a thorn stabbing underneath the hem of my duster, but the spell-worked coat protected me from further harm. I was on my feet again in a second, readying another blast. But in that second, the Scarecrow had reversed its course with eerie agility. It headed for Charity and Molly, running on all three of its limbs like a wounded spider, awkward but still swift. This time I couldn't afford to take my time about lining up the shot. I flicked a lash of fire between the Scarecrow and the Carpenter women, but it sidestepped, and I only burned a few loose-end tendrils from its vine body. The Scarecrow hurtled toward Molly. Charity lay perfectly still beside her, sprawled on the black ice. But only until the Scarecrow came within reach of her sword. Then Charity rolled and popped up into a low, slashing lunge. Her sword seared its way through the Scarecrow's undamaged leg, slicing it off at an angle that began at mid-thigh and finished just above the knee. It frantically rolled again, struggling to get out of sword range. Charity pressed ruthlessly, too close to the damned fetch to let me blast it again. The Scarecrow hopped and skittered on its remaining limbs, heading for the edge of the parapet.
"Charity!"
I shouted.
"Down!"
Michael's wife dropped out of my line of fire in an instant. The fetch shimmered, body contorting weirdly, and leapt. On the way, it changed. Membranous wings unfurled from its body and beat powerfully down, and within a heartbeat, the rest of the fetch's body had conformed to the shape of one of the monstrous, hang glider-sized bats I'd seen in Fairy once before. It hurtled away, wings thrashing to gain altitude, and the fairy moon shone down in lunatic glee. I had a perfect shot. Once more, I called upon the fire of summer I'd taken in. I could feel its intensity beginning to ebb, but if the fetch managed to slip away, I might never have such an opportunity again. Besides, that creature had tormented my friend's wife and daughter, nearly murdered them right in front of my eyes. And now it was going to answer for it. So I unleashed the fire again, this time so brilliant that it lit dark mountainsides 5 or 10 miles away, so hot that the blowing snow hissed into instant steam in the wake of the flame. When it struck the fetch, it detonated into a blinding conflagration, an explosion that roared so loudly that it shattered every icy replica of a rose vine upon the parapet. What tumbled, burning, from the fairy skies toward the merciless mountains below could not have been identified as anything in particular. It trailed sparks, soot, and ash, and when it slammed into a granite cliffside, it hit with such force that an icy rock slide was jarred loose from the mountain's slope, burying the fetch under incalculable tons of stone. I shook my staff at the rock slide in a primal gesture of triumph and shouted, "Who's next?" The courtyard below became completely silent for a second, and then I could see fetches, too dark to make out clearly, darting away from the base of the spire, retreating from the fight.
"Harry?"
Charity said, her voice strained. I hadn't realized it when Charity had gotten her head down, but she'd dropped into a baseball player's slide. Thanks to all the fire I'd been pitching around, the black ice had become slick with a thin layer of meltwater, and her momentum was carrying her with slow, dreamy smoothness toward the parapet's edge. I turned to run toward her, and then used an ounce of brain power to deduce that I'd only be duplicating the behavior that got Charity into the mess to begin with. Instead, I dropped to all fours, crawling forward with my staff extended. Her ankles were over the edge by the time I got close enough to reach her. She was able to get her fingers around the end of the wizard's staff, and I locked onto the other end, halting her slide. I then began to move backward very slowly, very carefully. The black ice of the parapet hardened once more in a moment, as though it had never thawed, and I pulled Charity carefully away from an involuntary education in skydiving. Once she was clear, we both turned to look at Molly. The girl lay quietly, still breathing. I rolled onto my back until I could get my breath again. Charity rose and went to her daughter. I didn't follow her. It wasn't the kind of moment she'd appreciate me sharing.